Thank you for listening to Rachel Podcast。如果你而家聽緊雷超播客啦，咁啊，今集咧係英文嘅一集節目啊。So today's my guest sitting right next to me is Sang Huang.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Sang Huang is we play a lot on the Asian circuit, no?
Yeah.
But you're not. Before we start this podcast, we chat a little bit. Neither of us identify ourselves as a pro, right?
Right.
So I think previously I was chatting with Edward, a couple of other people too, kind of like the definition, with Eddie as well, the definition of a poker pro. And I felt like, you know, I think a lot of people have a misunderstanding about it. To me, what is it to you?
Well, I think, you know, it means different things to different people, right? But for me, if you play poker and winning or the profit that you make is, you know, your main income stream, then I would consider you a professional poker player, right?
Okay. That sounds very reasonable. That's actually almost verbatim my definition as well, you know, if you derive much of your income.
But it is subjective. I mean, everyone has a different definition.
Which is fine. I mean, I guess some people take pride if they can call themselves pro, right? I think one of the, however, like the reason I bring it up is because I think one of the most common misunderstanding is whenever someone see a player who isn't so good,
right?
Then, oh, that guy cannot be a pro. How can he be a pro? He suck. Right, but like, well, you forgot about something. Like, people can suck at their job.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think if you, you know, I think it's more of how you sort of define yourself, right? And how you want others to know you by, you know? And if you consider yourself a poker pro, then fair enough. I don't really have any strong opinion on it.
Nevertheless, so I was just, well, right now is the year 2021. I remember, well, we haven't been, you know, talking to each other quite a lot because of the pandemics. But what I remember is the last couple of times when we were still traveling to play some poker, you actually were doing good. I recall you winning two high rollers.
Yeah, I think it's called running good. everyone has a streak of a period of time where things just, you know, go your way, right? Like the key all-ins or flips, and if it goes your way, you're kind of like, oh, this might be my day. So ran good. And hopefully the pandemic sort of goes away to the point where we can travel again.
Well, I mean, yeah, true. I mean, like, you put it this way, like, while you don't identify yourself as a pro, you do sound like a pro. Like, I think that is a very healthy, you know, way to look at, you know, your result, like, when you... Well, because, I mean, sometimes, you know, winning a tournament is hard.
It is difficult.
Yeah, but, like, you know, you felt like, oh, it's running good. Obviously, you know, you're being modest, I guess.
Well, you know, during the course of the tournament, there's a lot of different...
It was APT and the Red Dragon, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. I think during a tournament, you know, you do have a lot of key spots where things could totally go the other way, right?
You bad
beat somebody, or you win the flip.
Well, just a flip, big flip for a very large amount of chips.
You know, what you want is when you are all in during those flips, you want to win. And if you are going to lose, because you do lose flips within tournaments, right? You want to lose the ones where, you know, you are covering the other person, right? So you're still alive. So I think that's where the run good comes, right? You could have the best possible hand, but, you know, one bad beat and the other guy has you covered, you're out of the tournament. So those key moments are what I consider, you know, really run goods.
Really run goods. Those are the crucial moments. But
right. But
we don't really live for those moments. Right? The moments we live for are the moments we lift the trophies, no?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, those are the sort of adrenaline rushes that you want.
Yeah.
But in order to get there, you have to run good. So, yeah, I think I'd consider myself to have ran good a lot in the last, when we were playing live.
Well, obviously, you know, like there are variants, there are, you know, run good. Some of run good, like, I mean, because the concept of run good, you know, partly you can chalk it up as variants. And sometimes, well, even like very serious, like, academic research even mentioned something like hot hands.
Right.
Hot hand syndrome. Like, I was an academic economist myself. I even seen you know, papers from top journals, even with the word hot hand syndrome
right.
on it. Like, so I think it's a natural way to think about it. Like, I too think about, like, I don't think everything is easy to describe in science, but I think hot hand, I mean, I just don't think people have, in general, people have the correct idea about hot hand. I do, which in some ways I do think hot hand exists. In right. that, like, I think many people, when they think about hot hand, is that it's a luck. Something, I don't know, in the alignment of the constellations,
right.
make them like this particular 2 hours right. is the golden hours to be successful. But to me, it's the state of the body, of the mind, where yeah. somehow you're just in overdrive.
Yeah.
And perform well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one thing that I've learned playing poker the last few years is how well you control your emotions definitely affects how you play too, right? You might think one more thought that runs through your mind might save you a few chips, which, you know, if you then double up a few times, you might be back in the tournament. So I think, yeah, I mean, for me, as long as I try or realize that I do have, you know, some flaws based on how I control my emotions, I try to be aware of that and then focus on making sure I make the best possible play at the moment. So
I think we do travel in this, you know, similar, you know, poker friend circles, right?
Right.
So because you mentioned, like, being, you know, level-headed, being real calm, being the opposite of emotional while we're on the table, right? Because many of the more successful players around us, like, I would say Vincent Lee, for example, very level-headed.
Yeah.
Even actually outside the table too.
Yeah.
Right? So, but actually, like, ever since I restart this is the second season of my podcast, I've been, you know, I sometimes chat with my guests, like, because sometimes I feel like, is that really the way to go? I understand, like, you know, having a level head probably, for the most part, help with the result, help with our play. I can't help but thinking we're losing, I don't know, the human side.
You know,
what we are.
I certainly get what you're trying to say. I think as humans, we are by definition emotional, right? Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, but the thing is, emotions are subjective by definition. And
sure.
I think
not everyone
making optimal decisions and making a lot of those decisions require you to be less, you know, subjective and more objective. And I think emotions can be a sort of hindrance in making those the best decision possible. Just because you make the best decision, that doesn't mean you're going to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a higher chance of you, you know, running up that little bit more, you know, deep in a tournament. And I think those are the things that make the difference long term. But I agree with you. I mean, like, once you finish the tournament or once you bust, then you can let all the emotions out.
Yeah, you can yeah. cheer, you know, you can yeah. be ecstatic about the win yeah. or...
I mean, I'm always emotional when my friends are running deep or when I'm railing yeah. friends, right? But if I was the one playing and my friends are the ones cheering, as someone that is competing in that moment, you want to be as level-headed as possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah. But we are all emotional by definition.
Because, I mean, like, sometimes, like, because I don't think poker always discourage, you know, display of emotions. I mean, obviously there are cases of abuse, you know,
right.
people would almost be abused. But sometimes I think it's good, you know, like, you know, me cheering after winning and crucial all that doesn't mean, you know, I am antagonistic to my opponent. Doesn't mean I hate that guy. It's just that, you know, this is a very
yeah.
a moment. It's a moment worthy.
It's a key moment that you want to be, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. One thing that I found interesting, and the only reason why I found this out about myself is because of COVID, because we couldn't travel to
play online.
Live tournaments,
yeah,
right?
We can't play live, yeah.
I get really emotional when playing online.
Because you don't have to
I don't have to worry about, you know, what other people are doing, you know, whether they're looking at me. I'm in front of my own computer, and if I get bad beat, I'm like, oh. But, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing I learned about myself, whereas when I'm playing live, I already go into that mindset when I'm sat on the table. that, you know, this is a way I want to react to certain things that are not within my control, right? If you get bad beat or if you lose a flip, that's not something that you can control, right? So whereas even though I know that when I'm playing online by myself at home, I tend to, you know, tilt a lot easier, which is interesting. Yeah. So I guess I like playing live more than playing online.
Like I said, like, I've been pondering this. I definitely don't have all the answers. But one thing for sure is that, like, I think about people around me. I mentioned Vincent Sparrow also, and many others. Like, most, I think there's a very high correlation between, you know, someone who is very calm, very collected at the table, and their success. So, well, I mean, if you're...
And those guys are very objective guys, right, when it comes to poker. They rarely tilt or get upset about certain things that occurred on the table. The first thing that I think, you know, those guys would probably do is at least calm down and then figure out whether their plays or certain moments, key moments, were, you know, they made the most optimal decision or not. And thinking about it like that and not thinking about it on an immediate sort of short-term basis of how you felt in that specific moment, I think enables them to have better results over time. Because, you know, with poker, it's a long-term, you know, grind, right, or competition, right? Your life generally doesn't change. I mean, even if you're a pro, your life generally doesn't change after one tournament, unless, you know, you play one main event and World Series of Poker main event and you win, right? And most people, the vast majority of people can't do that. So it is a long-term sort of, you know, competition, and I think that sort of level-headedness enables them to do well for a long period of time.
Yeah. So while we're on the subject of, well, good players, so, well, you and I, we don't, you know, we're recreational players, but I mean, we talk a lot about strategy. We would discuss hands. I would dare say we are the studious type. You know, we don't mind spending the resources and time and effort to think about hands and to get better. So what do you do? Like, I do know you have subscription to some coaching site. You probably use some software. Tell us, like, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the low-hanging fruits, so to speak, right? If you have money purchase.
We're well-promoted, and they're not prohibitively expensive, for sure.
Right, right. And obviously with technology, these sort of knowledge clusters become more accessible, right? Because it's easier for the provider to scale their time. Whereas back in the day, it was mostly, you know, one-on-one or intimate coaching, which obviously costs more money.
Pretty old school.
Right.
Like Edward, actually. Yeah. Like, I interviewed him a couple episodes ago, and he now has an apprenticeship, running an apprenticeship of seven students.
Right.
Like, honestly, like, I think regardless of, although I like technological, you know, getting better, technology getting better, I like it a lot, but I do think, I mean, it's human nature. I think, like, apprenticeship, if run properly, if the people involved, namely the teachers and the students, are into it, give it their 100%, I think it's probably the best mode of learning.
I generally agree with that. I think, you know, humans are social creatures. So, you know, I think having that sort of close-knit group where, you know, when you're running good and you're playing well, people celebrate your success. When things aren't going well, they help you get over those periods of time. I think that's the social aspect is probably, I think it's probably the best. However, you know, when we're talking about some of the guys that we either idolize or we watch on TV, getting access to knowledge from them directly is very difficult. Obviously,
or used to, at least, yeah.
Right. Every single person only has 24 hours in a day. How many students can they realistically have? Mm-hmm. And for a recreational player like me, I think having access to these courses as well as videos they put out, you know, not only does it help the content creator to scale their time, it helps me gain access to their sort of thought process, things that I probably wouldn't get, you know, I'd first have to figure out a way to get connected to them, right? And then I have to, you know, provide some mutual benefit or value to them as well. I'd have to get to know them. And this process, whilst it's not impossible, it's definitely impossible for the vast majority of players, right? Mm-hmm. Including myself. So, you know, I think having access to these tools is definitely better for the majority of players.
Mm-hmm. Because I mentioned, like, so you have, like, subscriptions to, like, these coaching videos? Which one? Like,
Raise Your Edge and Run It Once. I haven't finished all the courses, but, yeah, I mean, I do have access to.
Because the reason I want to point out is, like, obviously these two and probably along with...
Run It Once,
Upsway, yeah. Like, these are the top coaching sites, right? But even that, you know, they are prone to changes, too. Like a couple years ago when I started the podcast... Like whenever, like, we're on a similar topic, right? Like I used to say, oh, the best way to learn is to. It's probably not read books anymore. I watch poker video, coaching videos, and a small group. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the advice I used to give. I think it's still valid. Find people with similar skill level, mm-hmm. but probably different thinking process as you, right. And have form a study group. I think this still holds. But what I like to bring us is right now, like there's something. Well, Discord is very common, right? Like it's slowly changing, right? Including the site you mentioned, right?
Yeah, I think. Well, I think everyone learns in, you know, whatever they're trying to learn. So they learn in different ways. Some people learn by more of a practical sort of angle, like they need to play more. And they learn that way.
Oh, okay.
Some people like to learn.
Yeah, there's all eternal debate of, you know, how much you should study and how much you should play, right?
Right. So I think it all depends on yourself. So ultimately, what it boils down to, in my opinion, is you need to, or you know, for me, what I try to do is I try to figure out what my strengths and weaknesses are, how I, you know, spend the least amount of time to get the maximum amount of value from, you know, learning. And you just want to scale that, right? So I think it's different for different people. It's very hard to have a one-size-fits-all model because everyone learns in different ways.
Yeah.
So as long as you know what is the most effective way for you to learn, you could probably scale out that way.
Yeah, I think poker is one of the space where, the old methods were made obsolete, right? Like books, like I kind of talked down about books. Mm-hmm. I don't think books inherently are problematic. Mm. What's problematic is how long the cycle it takes to publish.
Right.
And by then, you know, maybe the information aren't written in a way that is most useful.
Right.
Is what I mean. Then we move. Then the poker world move on to videos.
Right.
Which is it's more for certain it still works.
Right.
But what I'm saying is right now, like we're moving to the world of Discord, which is by the way not a new concept at all. Like it's kind of. Like an evolution of what I mentioned just a bit ago, right? Like, you know, have friends mm-hmm. get together in a study group, right? Mm-hmm. And right now what I see is, like, I think all of the sites we mentioned has that too, like Run It Once, mm-hmm. Raise Your Edge, right? Have these Discord server with, like, all the different dedicated subsections, and sometimes you could get other members to answer your questions. Sometimes you could even get one of their coaches to answer.
Right.
Which is... Yeah, I mean, technology does enable that. I don't know which one is the which one is the best. But like I said, everyone takes it differently.
Yeah, and I think you know, in terms of content, I don't think that if you were to study one form of content, all of a sudden your winning rate or your ROI is going to improve drastically. And it's going to maintain that way,
it's
right?
Unreasonable it's unreasonable expectation,
right.
For
it's
sure.
It's an unreasonable expectation. I think what these courses do is it feeds you sort of snippets of how you might sort of evolve as a player yourself, right? And I don't think there's one course that you can just take and then all of a sudden start crushing. I don't think that is possible. Not just that, you also have to adapt to your environment when you're competing, right? Different players on your table, how they play.
Yeah.
I think what these courses do is it gives you sort of the base background of how you might approach these, how you might approach your strategy, and then you need to adjust that strategy based on what you see and the different pieces of information you get whilst you're on the table. And it's very dynamic because it's very rare that you're going to sit down with the same group of players constantly in different, you know, tournaments, even if it's during the same series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's a game of information, and that pieces of information changes very quickly.
Yeah, it's kind of how I think about. I don't know. I sparingly, on occasions, I've done, you know, a little private courses for people. Like, at the end of the day, I felt like, yeah, I mean, poker is just a hobby, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. And
well, for us it is, yeah.
Yeah, for us, right? And then it's more fun when we're better at it, for sure, right?
I think, yeah, I mean, I don't know anyone that has a hobby where they don't want to get better, right? Or they don't want to win, right?
Well, if anything, like, yeah, I agree with your statement, but poker is probably the space where I see the most number of people who are reluctant to invest into getting better. From everyone thinks they're better than they truly are, right? Isn't it?
Or
not everybody.
Well, I think everyone has an opinion on how certain hands should be played.
Yeah.
But mathematically, there could be an optimal play, but, you know, as some of the pros would say, there's population tendencies, and I think, yeah, I mean, but for me, it's not really a question of whether, you know, I want to sort of, you know, worry about what other people think, whether my play was good or not. As long as I'm enjoying myself, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah, because I'm reflecting on my coaching career, right? Like, I've done, like, Poker for Dummies kind of courses, and I've done, you know, in small groups, like, and I charge money for both, by the way. And now nowadays, I honestly think, like, with the ease of access to basic information, like, the first, you know, Poker for Dummies classes should almost be free. Honestly, I'm sincere. Like, first of all, probably unlikely I'm making you a better player from telling you the odds of poker and, I don't know, importance of positions and so on, or awareness of stack size. Well, the best I can do is to raise your awareness, arouse your interest too, right? What I really do enjoy is in the past is like those little small group of people. Like, they are like, they're usually, you know, I was, dare I say, well-off people who consider poker as a hobby. So my key is very simple, right? I'm like a golf coach, basically. You're never going to be a golf pro, or in this case, poker pro, but I want you to enjoy more, a little more at your next, you know, friend's poker game. That is my goal. I even teach them little things like how to look at your hand.
Right.
Like, because, I mean, I play in a lot of private games myself, and sometimes it's hilarious. Even for, like, you'd be surprised. Like, we would be playing for pretty considerable stake, and people are, you know, pick up their hearts.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, like, this is a podcast, so I can't really see you, but right now I'm showing Sang exactly how they see, right? So I think all these is to make the, well, I mean, make the experience more enjoyable and, you know, make them enjoy a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are sort of, well, on the topic of how you hold your cards, I mean, there are best practices. I mean, as long as you don't show other people your cards, and as long as you don't lift up your cards off the table, which is against the TD rules, right? Which is against...
Well, if it's... No, it's okay, but...
Oh, is it? Okay.
But it's really difficult to prevent others from seeing your cards,
right,
isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, as long as you stick to the rules and you protect your hands, then...
Well, I mean, then there are cool ways to look at cards, too, so...
Yeah, which, I mean, you know? Yeah, I mean...
A little bit. It's like, it's again, it's like golf. I don't know why I keep bringing up a sport I don't even play, but,
right. But
I mean, you know, if you have good posture, your swing looks cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you like it a little better, too, right? So, yeah, that was the coach. So, I don't know. Like, I wrote back to coaching. You know, I don't think any of these are obsolete by any means. These are, by the way, what we mentioned are, we're not getting money out of this. Let's be honest. This podcast is getting no sponsors. I hope to get some, though. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to get better, I mean, forget about the free content on YouTube, or, I don't know, in the future, I may give a free free class on poker odds. Those are not going to help you. Like if you want to improve, well, go for these sites. I don't know. The names we mentioned are Upswing, Razor Edge, and Run It Once. Maybe HAPBA will do something in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it, you know, again, it really depends on what you're looking for, right? Some people, they don't really care about their win rate. They just want to enjoy the sort
enjoy
of social
time.
Aspect of it.
Yeah.
Some people are more, a little bit more serious, even if they're under the recreational umbrella. And then you have pros. So I think it just depends on where you see yourself. And
I think knowing more never doesn't hurt.
For either of those motivations. Yeah, I agree. I think constant improvement is something that, you know, that doesn't hurt. And it definitely helps improve your win rate, right? And I don't think there's anyone that plays poker that wants to lose, you know? Like, they don't mind losing, but it's not like they purposely want to lose, right? So, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I don't think anyone, you know, try to lose.
Right.
They just end up losing.
Right, exactly. So...
Yeah, well, that was really fun talking to Sang. I mean, I'm grateful to be talking to anyone, you know, in this, you know, world conditions anyway, and we're not. I mean, usually when it's very rare I see Sang here in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, I usually see you during MTTs, right?
like around Asia, so this is different. Yeah, God, I have no idea. I guess no one have the answer. I don't know when we can go play live MTT again.
Yeah, I hope it's sooner rather than later, but it doesn't look too good right now.
I am not optimistic, which is why, yeah, I'm doing this podcast. Maybe I should start a Discord as well, I don't know, at some point.
I think you can. I mean, you guys have built a community of players, and the members are some of the best players here in Hong Kong, to just someone, you know, like me, like a recreational player. So I'm sure you can figure out ways to.
Yeah, one of the things about, like, the two aspects of what you just mentioned, right? One of the thing is, I think recreational players, this is Discord or something similar is definitely a good mode of communication, how to get the community together, because, they don't mind. They probably want to get better. For the most part, they want to be have more fun, and they don't mind others getting better.
Right.
Whereas, honestly, in some cases, you know, the pros, mm-hmm. whether it's legit pros or self-proclaimed pros, sometimes it could get a little toxic. I mean, because if others get better, it hurts their income.
Right.
In some sense, right. So, yeah, I think so. It's something like, I don't know, man. Like, we're about the same age now, right?
Yeah, I think it's hard to please everybody, right?
No.
You know, whatever you do, whatever you say, there's always going to be someone that doesn't agree. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think what's interesting about Discord is you can definitely have different sort of topics, right? Everyone joins or HKPPA because of their love of poker. But the reason why they're interested or what type of content they're interested in is very diverse, right?
Yeah.
So some people might be listening to us talking. Some people might only want to learn about specific hand strategies in cash games. Some people might only want to know about specific tournament strategies. Some people might want to learn about the sort of... the places that they can compete, right? The different locations, and mm-hmm. obviously you, having traveled a lot, you know a lot about, you know, the good restaurants or things to do in different places like Vietnam or Taiwan or Thailand or Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
So having Discord, what's interesting for me is you can sort of have different topics, right?
Yeah,
and everyone can gain sort of valuable
finds what they're
interested in.
The reason I bring up age. Are we similar age?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm 36. I don't mind because I think I'm past
the time.
I'm
a bit younger, but yeah.
I think I'm past the time I can, you know, sell my looks. But
anyway. I never had looks, so it was never going
to
be.
But
sellable.
What I really try to keep up is I try to keep up technology, but at the same time, like, kind of the. How the technology shape social media,
right.
Basically. Even this podcast is very dynamic. I'm still doing a podcast, which is kind of like a radio show,
right?
But not really over radio wave, but rather I post it on Podomatic and then post it on Facebook and so on. But this is very dynamic. I don't know. Like, if the audience have any ideas or opinions, this you could shape this. I mean, I just love poker probably till the day I die.
Yeah.
And I just want to talk poker
and add value in your own way, right?
So
I think anybody, I agree. I second what Ray said. Anybody that has interesting ideas or concepts.
Yeah, maybe I'll move this onto Twitch, which I'm seriously thinking about, because actually in 2 weeks our guest is Maureen from WPA, Women Poker Association. She has a similar podcast, but it's on Twitch, something I'm seriously thinking about. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm a middle-aged man trying to keep up. So if you out there, young people, old people, you have your idea, just throw it at me.
Yeah, I think everyone sort of interacts with social media and the different platforms for different things, right? So, yeah, I mean, I guess Discord is interesting because as long as you're under the umbrella of your interest in poker, you could have different topics. So.
And I have a lot of free time on my hand.
Okay, cool.
But that said, this is it for this episode. I really appreciate Sang.
Thanks for having me.
We'll come on here, and we will talk later. Bye.
Bye-bye.